Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. If you're just tuning in, Tony Katz is not here today. He is, I believe he's on his way back from a fabulous show in Las Vegas. But I'm Kira Davis. I'm filling in for him and coming to you from sunny Southern California. And, well, we've got a new law that is set to come into effect on April 1st. It's a minimum wage law, but it's only for fast food workers. So fast food minimum wage in California on April 1st goes up to $20 an hour. Can you guess what's happening here right now? I mean, can you just guess what's happening at fast food restaurants right now? Yeah, that's right. People are getting fired left and right. I went into my local McDonald's. I actually talked about this story on Tony Katz Today the last time I was hosting. And I think I brought up the Panera Bread disaster, which is Gavin Newsom, Governor Gavin Newsom's friend, is the owner of Panera Bread, which technically qualifies as a fast food restaurant. And like all other fast food restaurants, you know, the Panera Bread people were saying, hey, this is going to be very difficult for us. So Governor Newsom managed to insert this little exception in this new law that's coming down on California fast food franchises that would exempt any fast food restaurant that bakes and sells bread, which ironically only Panera Bread qualifies for. And I thought it would be clever for McDonald's to just start baking bread, but no, they thought about that. And so they grandfathered it. You have to have already been selling bread for the last 5 years or something. So that's the shenanigans that are going on here. Well, I walked into my local McDonald's just the other day, hoping that their ice cream machine would be working because I wanted an ice cream cone. It was, spoiler alert, it was working. And, they had completely remodeled the inside and there was one person at the counter and everything else was a mobile kiosk. So again, this is Democrat logic. This is progressive logic, right? Oh, that you should be able to make a living wage flipping burgers, which by the way, you should not. If people can't afford a family on a fast food minimum wage. Yeah, no. If you should not be having a family if you think you're going to support that family working at a fast food restaurant. That's absolutely ridiculous. But also, if you work anywhere for a certain amount of time, you're not going to stay at the same wage you started at. There's nothing about a basic minimum wage job that is supposed to support a family. So that whole concept is just ridiculous. But then, of course, that's the logic, right? We give people enough to raise families on. Well, now minimum wage hamburger flippers in California are making more money in some cases than nurses in the state. So obviously, a place like McDonald's can't afford that. And what do you have to do? You have to cut jobs. By the way, here's another little fun fact about California. I don't know if you've been noticing our governor touting this surplus. Apparently, we had this $300 million budget surplus because California is such an amazing economy. Oh, the governor revised that. We're actually in a deficit. We actually have a $75 billion deficit or something ridiculous like that, which, of course, we already knew. There was never a surplus. How could there be a surplus? In California, we have $1 trillion in unfunded pensions just weighing on us, ready to collapse the state at any moment. Of course, we were never solvent. Of course not. But that, so we're losing jobs, that's losing taxpayers, but we need more taxpayer revenue. And I just told you about Prop 1, which miraculously got approved after 2+ weeks of ballot counting, which is another $7 billion in taxpayer money coming forward. And yet we're cutting jobs for people who would be paying taxes. This is the absolute insanity that we are living under, not just here in California. It's coming to you. So if you're listening to me, you're in the Midwest, you're in Indianapolis right now, and you're like, Kira, you know, that's you guys. We don't do that stuff here. It's coming to you. I know I'm listening to what's going on around you in the news breaks. I know that you guys are experiencing some of the same things. That's on purpose. California is coming to you. It should matter to you what happens here. And we are going to have a presidential candidate, Gavin Newsom. At some point, you're going to have him. This is what he's been bred for his whole life, is to run for president. So if he doesn't get to do it this year, and I really don't think he will, we're definitely going to see him in 2028. So all of this stuff matters. Here's something else that's going on here in California. Insurance rates are skyrocketing, and insurance companies can no longer afford to insure California customers. They're leaving the state. Now, this is a multifold issue, because part of the issue is, quote, natural disasters. And I'm using air quotes here because we have a lot of fires here in California. So many, we have a fire season. That's just, half the state is desert. Half the state's in drought permanently. That's just how it is. We have a fire season. We have also electric companies with no accountability because they've bought and paid for lots of politicians in Sacramento, and they've caused a lot of these fires, horrible, horrific, tragic fires with dozens and hundreds of lives lost. And because of those fires, insurance rates have gone up. So those are becoming unaffordable. But also, California has an insurance commission. They have a public insurance program called FAIR. I can't remember what the acronym for is exactly, but it's basically the public insurance exchange. And the goal is to drive everyone to that public exchange. And so when insurance becomes unaffordable for you, for your home or your vehicle, then the insurance agent will say, well, go get it from the state. And you can imagine what state coverage is like, right? It's a lot like universal healthcare. It's not very good. That's what's happening in California. And it's not just the fires, it's the crime, right? We're not prosecuting crime. We're letting crime stream over the borders. Police in Los Angeles and San Francisco will no longer respond to calls of stolen vehicles. Those do not warrant police responses anymore. They tell you to file a claim with your insurance. That's how bad things are here. So it's becoming unaffordable. So last week I was in Sacramento and I was doing some work with an education group up there, California Policy Center. But I had the opportunity to be at the Capitol, and I decided to go catch a hearing. Whatever hearing was in session, I was like, I had 1 hour of free time. I'm going to go catch a hearing. So there was an insurance commission hearing, and I went in there and I sat there for an hour, and it was brutal. I never would have imagined it would have been so interesting. I had no idea this stuff was about to pop off, but I listened to agent after agent stand up there and tell the commission, we are about to hit an insurance crisis here in California. And I know they're experiencing something similar in Florida. Might not be crime related, but it's definitely weather related. And other states are experiencing this too, and it is crime related, particularly in big cities like Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, San Francisco. An agent at one guy came up and he said, look, in a regular year, I would refer 15 or so people to the state insurance exchange. This year alone, and I want you to know it's only March 2024, in case you didn't know, he said, this year alone, I've referred 300 people. And news comes today. Here is news. State Farm is pulling out of California. State Farm has dropped 72,000 home insurance policies, and they are pulling out. They say they can no longer afford to be here. That comes just days after I sat in that hearing. Something, an issue I knew nothing about. Had no idea that this was about to fall on us. And just days later, this is what happens. We're in real trouble. It's coming to you. This is, you know what? I'm not going to play this. I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to play this clip because I want you to pay attention to this. This is one of those little areas where people don't pay attention and we're not really involved, and it's actually having bigger consequences for everyone. So no matter what state or city you're listening to this program in, I want you to pay a very close attention to this next segment. This is something that is going to affect you on a real world level right away if you don't become a watchdog for this kind of stuff. And I'll tell you what I know about what at least my government in California, what their real intentions are with this as well, what I know to be for a fact. Don't go anywhere. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. You're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. You can find my book, Drawing Lines, Why Conservatives Must Begin to Battle Fiercely in the Arena of Ideas, anywhere you find your books. Go buy that and sign up for my podcast, Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. I'm talking about, well, lots of different kinds of madness, but particularly in California, we've got insurance madness, and it's coming to a state and town near you. A State Farm has dropped 72,000 policies and is pulling out of the state. I want to play this report. It's about 2 minutes long, but it's an interesting report to help. I really want you to pay attention. This is a concerted nationwide, I might even say global effort. I'll put it all together for you after this clip, but listen carefully to this report on what's happening in the California insurance market. Go ahead and play that.
We do have some bad news for many California homeowners. The state's largest home insurer is set to hike prices this year. Sorry. State Farm customers are expected to pay 20% more starting March 15th. The California Department of Insurance approved the company's new rates, which it said were necessary due to increased construction costs. Back in May, State Farm announced that it would stop selling new insurance policies to homeowners here in California because of wildfire risks.
Sorry, that was shorter than 2 minutes, but great. More time for me to talk, which is what I love to do. But here's State Farm's response. The decision was not made lightly and only after careful analysis of State Farm's general's financial health, which continues to be impacted by inflation, catastrophe exposure, reinsurance costs, and the limitation of working within decades-old insurance regulations. Now, you heard the lady on that report saying, oh, this is wildfire, because it's very convenient for the state to blame Mother Nature instead. But State Farm is saying, well, no, there's other things. Inflation, of course, natural disasters, but also regulation. Goes on to say State Farm takes seriously our responsibility to maintain adequate claims paying capacity for our customers and to comply with applicable financial solvency laws. It is necessary to take these actions now. The insurance commissioner here in California, the state insurance commissioner, who's a Democrat just like everybody else in California, did admit that this was a crisis. But here's what I know about this. Stay with me here for just a second. I've been on this show talking about this. Have you heard about AB 5? That's that freelancer law here in California that removes the ability for most of us to act as freelancers and requires us to be waged employees. It's supposedly, you know, supposed to address misclassification, because some companies will misclassify employees so they don't have to pay them. They can pay them under freelance rules. Another response to overregulation. Anyways, it's a terrible bill. It passed here. It wiped out the freelance market here in California, besides those of us who could get exemptions. Joe Biden has taken that and made it a rule on the National Labor's Council. And it's now a national rule. It's being challenged by the Republicans in the House, but their goal is to make it law. So when I was becoming an activist on this issue, and I was talking to a member of our legislative body up in Sacramento, a Republican member, and I was so frustrated. I was saying, this is ridiculous. We're not asking for this. This is the government coming in and really denying our rights to be freelancers, and they're wiping out all of these jobs. Why is this happening? Why aren't they listening to us? And he told me this, Kira, this is actual concerted strategy that is written down. And it is not just in our state. It is nationwide. The goal of the progressive leftists, as embodied by the Democrat Party at this point, is to make everybody in the United States either a W-2 employee or a union member, right? The idea, or, excuse me, a W-2 employee and union member, or on the dole. That's the goal. They want to see more people on the dole, on welfare. And that AB5, that anti-freelancer bill, a version of that has been passed in about a dozen westernized countries already. It is a global movement. And the purpose is to drive everyone to depend on the government. And that is why every stand you take on every issue, be it cultural, be it political, be it policy related, it matters. There is no issue, there is no space that is too small for you to care about when it comes, because people aren't talking about this freelancer bill, people aren't talking about this insurance stuff, but it's all a concerted effort. Look at the people we're letting stream across our border. What's gonna happen to them? They're all going on the dole. They're all going on welfare. It is a concerted effort to transform America from a nation of independent, thriving, self-made people into a nation of dependence. And it should change your point of view on everything when you look at it from a position of dependent versus independent. Forget about Republican versus Democrat. Forget about conservative versus liberal. It is dependent versus independence. And we have a whole class of people in this country who are now in very influential positions, driving us to dependence in every corner. They don't want you to be dependent on your own judgment to decide what's best for your kid in school. That's for the experts. They don't want you to be dependent on your own knowledge and ability when it comes to protecting your health. So that people were getting banned from the internet during COVID for saying you should lose weight, that it'll be better for you. We're not even allowed to say that. They don't want you to be personally responsible for your own decisions and the consequences that those decisions engender. They want you to be dependent on the government for your home insurance. What happens when you're dependent on the government for your home insurance? You're dependent on the government for your home. You barely own your home now because you're a taxpayer. Right? And what happens if you don't pay your taxes? Eventually you don't own it. The idea is for you to not own anything, even your own business, even your own vote. You think about it from that perspective, every battlefield becomes of the utmost importance. And that is why it matters that you care about these things. And that's what the other side will tell you. They'll ridicule you. They'll shame you for wanting to talk about libraries, for wanting to talk about insurance, for why are you talking about this when we have X, Y, and Z going on? It's all connected. It's all related. Israel, the insurance market, crime, it's mass chaos on purpose. The goal is to get you to depend on the American government. And the more dependency American government has, the more powerful they are. And that is why your autonomy is the most important thing to protect above all. That's what you should be voting for. That's what you should be encouraging people to vote for. Those are the policies you should be supporting, because this is a concerted strategy. It's not an accident. And it's not just a few socialists and a few in a few places playing games. It's people determined to sow chaos and to reap the benefits of that, which is authoritarianism. All right, I'm going to go take one last major break here on the show. Don't go anywhere. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz, and you're listening to Tony Katz Today. back to Tony Katz Today. I'm Kira Davis, filling in for Tony Katz. Well, he's on his way back from Vegas. Welcome back to the show. We're pulling into our final half hour. Talking about Rana, Kamala, lots of crazy stuff going on out there. The insurance market, why you need to get involved where you're at. But I want to say something a little controversial right now. And I know I could get in trouble for this, but I was reading this opinion piece in the New York Times from Democrat strategist James Carville. Y'all know James Carville. He's the Southern man who was famous for the Clinton campaign. Anyways, talking about women in politics. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to tell you what he said. I think there's too many women in politics. In fact, matter of fact, I think women are running too many institutions. I know I'm going to get lambasted for that. But it's true. I think everything, particularly education, I'm saying this as a woman who's very involved in education, women are exclusively running too many institutions, and everything's becoming feminized. Education is feminized. Do you think it's an accident that we medicate boys, little boys in school, that we sedate them at a rate that's something, it's crazy, something like 120 something percent higher than for girls? And even anecdotally, I bet if you look around your life, I bet it's even you. You know people who have boys who are medicated, but not girls, little boys in school. It's the feminization of education. So, and that's happening across the board. It's just too many women running things. I'm a woman, and even I wouldn't want to work in an organization where there were only women, because women and men think differently, and we need that balance. And when we don't have the balance, we skew too far over into compassion, because we have compassionate qualities, nurturing traits. That's very womanly. I know that's controversial to say now too, but other people are recognizing this. James Carville says that there are too many preachy females in the Democratic Party, and that is to blame for Biden's bleeding support from key voters. This is in The Hill. In an interview published Saturday with the New York Times opinion columnist Maureen Dowd, Carville voiced concerns about the culture of the Democrat Party and how it could be impacting Biden's support among voters, especially those that are male. A suspicion of mine is that there are too many preachy females. Don't drink beer. Don't watch football. Don't eat hamburgers. This is not good for you, he said. The message is too feminine. Everything you're doing is destroying the family. You've got to eat your peas. Well, I think that's interesting that he said that, because that's a Obama quote. And remember, it was the right wingers were really upset when Obama said that. Eat your peas, stay healthy. We're not going to help you. You've got to take your vegetables. You got to take the hard things. Basically, he was telling people, take a hit. He was telling the taxpayers that are supporting the American system, well, you have to take a hit. Sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do, as if we don't do those things every day as taxpayers. So it's very interesting that Carville, a Democrat, is using the phrase eat your peas facetiously. He says, if you listen to Democrat elites, NPR is my go-to place for that. The whole talk is about how women and women of color are going to decide the election. I'm like, well, 48% of people that vote are males. Do you mind if they have some consideration? When it comes to Biden's low approval ratings, Carville quipped, when I looked at those polling numbers, it's like walking in on your grandma naked. You can't get that image out of your mind. I don't think he's wrong here. I think we do have a problem with the over-feminization of society. This is always how it goes. We're always overcorrecting. This is why I do think the American system of government is the superior form, although it's certainly far from perfected. It requires balance. I actually have an episode on the two-party system on Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. You find that wherever you find your podcast. It's an audio form podcast. I don't do video because I think there are a lot of issues. So there's a lot of hemming and hawing. So I have a lot of editing to do. I don't usually do video. I might do clips here and there, but you can find it on audio. But I did an episode on the two-party system. There's a lot of complaints about it. Conservatives, liberals, everyone complains about it. I'm Canadian by birth. I was raised in Canada, although I have one American parent, and that's how I got here. And I've been an American since 18. But I, you know, grew up under that the parliamentary system. And a lot of people say, oh, well, the two-party system, you don't have any choice. You do have choice. We do make choices. I explain why it is the superior form. You might look at all of the different representatives in parliamentary systems and say, oh, people have so many choices, but it's just a recipe for more chaos. In short, we get the chaos over with before we get to the generals. And in the parliamentary system, the chaos is the generals. So we have the system, but the reason why a two-party system, or one of the reasons, is superior is because it creates a balance. So instead of having all these little entities having to unite to create weight, you've got two weights, left and right, blue and red, Republican and Democrat. You need balance. Everything needs balance. And when one side gets out of balance, it causes us to overcorrect. So we had a system that was perhaps a bit too punitive for females. And now, thanks to the baby boomers, we have overcorrected, and now it is ruled by females. I love this quote. Someday I'll go find out who said it. But I was reading one day, I saw this quote from a politician during the days of suffrage, when women were fighting for the right to vote. And he said, I'm against giving women the right to vote, because if you give a woman the right to vote, she's got two votes, her vote and her husband's vote. Because most husbands vote with their wives. And that is still true today, by the way, statistically. And I can even say that anecdotally. So women are very powerful. We're very influential. We have a lot of influence, and we have different ways of exerting that influence. And when we don't have any counterbalance, it becomes dangerous. I think the breakdown of marriage and the family have contributed to this imbalance. And you can see that in the polling. Right? Single liberal women typically vote Democrat. Married conservative women don't. They tend to vote Republican. That another reason, again, all these things are connected. Another reason for you to look out there at the landscape and say, maybe there is a reason why a certain segment is working so hard to separate us from our kids, so hard to separate us from our tax dollars, so hard to separate us from our own health decisions, so hard to separate us from our insurance decisions. They're working so hard to separate us from traditional American values, because traditional Americans don't vote for progressive causes. I got into a lot of trouble one day. I was on Fox News, and there's this divide developing in the Black community between Black males and Black females. Black males are beginning to pull to the right, and they're skewing for Trump particularly, or beginning to, particularly when it comes to this election cycle. I'm not saying they're becoming Republicans, but there is a significant portion of Black males who are switching their votes to Trump. It's not the same, although it's creeping up slightly for females. It's not the same. And I was on Fox News one night, and somebody asked me, I guess being the Black guest, you know, they asked me about, can I speak about Black people? In the heat of the moment, I only had a few seconds. They said, why is this different, Kira? Can you explain this? And I said, I think a lot of Black women are voting for husbands, because most Black women are unmarried. The majority of Black women are single. And that ignited a firestorm. I got raked over the coals for it, but I'm not apologizing for it. And it doesn't just apply to Black women. It applies to women in general. I do think there is a direct connection between the breakdown of the family and our votes. And we're voting for support, right? People who don't have the traditional family structure are voting for the support that a family structure would provide. They're voting for the government to be that person. So all this stuff does matter, everybody. It does matter what your neighbor does. It does matter that you get married. It does matter that you have kids. It does matter that someone stays at home to raise your family. I know people don't like to hear that. And I'm a working mom. I'm a working mother. I get it. But we, the left has successfully pushed us out of the culture conversation, so much so that when we simply dip a toe back into it, all of a sudden they're screeching, oh, why are conservatives all of a sudden involved in the culture wars? We weren't. But if you say, hey, we want to teach your child, your kindergartner, about sex and sexual identity, but we don't want you to know about it, and parents go, well, I don't know if I want that. Why are you getting so weird about the culture wars? Right? They've successfully shamed us into staying out. Oh, you keep that personal. You keep that to yourself. You keep your personal politics out. No, that time is over. It's time to go to war when it comes to this stuff. It's time for us to be outspoken and to be saying the uncomfortable things. I do this a lot on my podcast, saying the uncomfortable things. I know these are uncomfortable conversations to have, but I just explained to you the global effort to unionize all workers on planet Earth. And of course, that sounds crazy to say out loud. A global conspiracy? It's not a conspiracy. It's happening and it's working. And it's coming to a municipality near you if it's not there already. So we must be vigilant about this. And yeah, it does mean that those people that you find distasteful, that you follow, they're so old fashioned, or they're out there talking about being a stay-at-home mom or getting married, not living together before you're married. This is something I've been talking about a lot. Even that skews the statistics in a way you don't want. All those conversations matter. Because all of these issues are connected. If we break down the family, we break down independent voters. Right? And I don't mean independent as a political designation. I mean the people who think independently and are willing to vote based on what they know, not based on what they feel. When you have something, a higher ideal, an ideal that is higher than the government, your family, your God, your community, you are much more likely to vote for the issues that protect those things and make you the person that gets to decide when it comes to those issues. And we are up against an entity that wants the government to be the quote person that makes all those decisions for you. Every space counts, every battle counts, every opinion counts. And it's no longer okay for us to be silent. Let's take one more break. I'm Kira Davis. Don't go anywhere. I'm filling in for Tony Katz, and you're listening to Tony Katz Today. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. I'm Kira Davis. Listen, it's been a great time as always. This time always flies by. Love the Tony Katz audience. If you want to hear more from me, there's a couple places you can find me. You can find me on Twitter at Real Kira Davis. You can go to my Substack, just kiradavis.substack.com, or just search my name on Substack. And you can go subscribe to my podcast. Just listen to yourself with Kira Davis. It should be easy enough to remember. Those are ways you can hear from me. I mean, I was talking about the over-feminization of everything, which James Carville even agrees with. And then I was picking through Twitter at the break, and here's a tweet from a female priest in England, in Liverpool. I don't know if you can tell, if you can suss out the disdain in my voice already before I've even started reading. Okay, she tweeted this out. She says, I went to a conference... I'm sorry. I'll try to read this without laughing. I went to a conference on whiteness last autumn. It was very good, very interesting, and made me realize whiteness is to race as patriarchy is to gender. So yes, let's have anti-whiteness and let's smash the patriarchy. That's not anti-white or anti-men. It's anti-oppression. This is a priest, a female priest. This is a woman of God, supposedly. Matter of fact, this is her bio. History, books, bridge, quilting, feminism, Christianity, Church of England, pronouns, she, her, Archdeacon of Liverpool. And she says, to manage my times and energy, I won't enter into debates here. It's the feminization of everything. This is why women should not be in the pulpit. It's always this shift because we always lean so hard into compassion, and that's good. We're created that way, but then we don't have the balance. My goodness, whiteness is to race as patriarchy is to gender. I don't even have enough time to break down all the reasons why that is so anti-Christian. But it's just ridiculous. This is what happens when we feminize everything. And instead of looking at actual, she's a priest. She's supposed to attend to the spiritual needs of people. I mean, she's not a priest. She's an activist, right? Just with a collar. That's basically what the Church of England is now. Feminism, getting everything. I am not convinced of having more. I say this as someone who, I want to be hired. I want to work. I want to get paid to do the things I want to do and like to do, but I'm not sure that it's a sign of progress to fill every leadership position with women. I agree with Carville here. And then the message becomes so outsized. He is saying 48% of your voters, Democrats, are men. I understand that you want to highlight the plight of the woman, but is there any circumstance under which a man's notions, ideas, or concerns might draw some attention? I mean, I'm not going to, you know, get in the way of the Democrat Party killing themselves off. I'm not going to stand in the way of them tripping over their own idiot ideas. But it amazes me how far all of this has been allowed to go. And if we don't put our foot down in places where we do have power, we won't have the power to combat this. And you just have to look to other westernized countries. Look to England. Just read that idiot post from that so-called priest from the Church of England. This is what you're spending your time on? Because I can guarantee you, people on the street level, people where I'm at, and I know it's the same in England, they're not caring about anti-whiteness or the patriarchy or whatever. They want to buy groceries for the same price they paid 5 years ago. They want to put gas in their car, and they want their kids to go to school and learn safely and not have to worry about being groomed. Doesn't seem like a lot to ask, everybody. All right, it's been a great show. I'll catch you guys next time. In the meantime, I'll see you on Twitter @RealKiraDavis. I've been Kira Davis, and this has been Toni Katz Today.